Underwent a 8-hour operation at Leeds General Infirmary. The former pub landlord from near Halifax has been telling the Yorkshire Post why he was picked for the pioneering op.
I suffer gout, which I've done for 20 years. Took a turn for the worst 5 years ago when I got infected gout in my hand, and it had to go in for a series of operations on it, which resulted in my hand being paralysed.
The schoolgirl shot in the head by the Taliban in Pakistan has been released from hospital in Birmingham. 15-year-old Malala was attacked last October after she campaigned for a girl's right to an education. The long-term unemployed would be guaranteed a six-month job on at least the minimum wage under a Labour government. That's according to the Shadow Chancellor, who says anyone out of work for more than 2 years would face losing their benefits if they didn't take it up. And Ed Ball says most unemployed people want the chance to work.
If you listen to the government, you would think that every person who's unemployed is a scrounger, is drunk, and behind the curtains asleep. Actually, the vast majority of people unemployed want to work, they're trying to find work. The problem is, the longer you're unemployed, the harder it is.
Shares of Marks & Spencer have dropped sharply amid speculation over its Christmas sales figures. They fell more than 3%, with total sales expected to be lower than predicted. A haul of gold and silver found in a field in Staffordshire has officially been declared treasure and could be worth a small fortune. The 81 items date from the 7th century. A Manchester City fan who confronted Rio Ferdinand at the end of the stormy Manchester derby in December has been banned from attending football matches for 3 years. 21-year-old landscape gardener Matthew Stott from Knutsford has also received a suspended prison sentence of 56 days. That's the latest. I'm Jeremy Kolchik.
You can listen to BCFM live on the internet and also download every show as a podcast at bcfm.org.uk. Drive Time on BCFM, 5 till 7 on 93.2 FM.
It's Friday, 5 o'clock, BCFM's politics show, Friday Drive Time. I'm Tony Gosling, and helping us review this week's news is the councillor from the Labour Party for St George West, Ron Stone. Well, will you try to get the Liberal Democrats to give their views? And if you want to see the names of the Lib Dems who come up top of my City Slackers League of councillors who refuse to come on the radio or simply don't reply to emails or phone calls inviting them on, do have a good look at the line for the Bristol City Slackers online. This includes Coutts Banker and Chief Whip of the Tory Party in Bristol, John Gulandris, and many others. So that's Bristol City Slackers if you want to know who won't come on talk on the radio. Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers is here too. After the 6 o'clock news today, it took 12 years for the accusations of who was to blame for the Paris Concorde crash to work their way through the French courts. When they finally did last month, there were some surprising revelations. I talked to a former private pilot and a barrister who's been chatting to ex-Concorde pilots about what really happened. Who was to blame for the crash that killed 113 people and why there was no justification for ending Concorde's career back in 2003. Plus, more daylight robbery as railfares go up again, way above inflation. Though they said that the First Great Western would come on possibly today, they've not replied to my request for them to explain, rather like the Lib Dems. So we talked to BCFM's very first own rail campaigner, Steve Satan. Up close and personal on the Falklands conflict. Is it just a load of hot air and electioneering by the Argentinian president, Christine Kirchner? Well, are old wounds from World War II reopening again in the form of controlling global oil supplies? Plus, Martin Summers' weekly tour of the world's hotspots. That's all in the second hour after six. On to our news review in a minute, but first, Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Tonight, mild. This weekend, 10 to 11 Celsius. Again, that's very mild. Sunny periods over the weekend. Next week, cold on Thursday, getting down to freezing, possibly, overnight. And sunny periods, though, throughout the week. Next weekend, that's the 12th and 13th of January, down to freezing temperatures next weekend. Possibly also rain. So that could mean some ice or even snow on Saturday. The week after next, staying cold until midweek with little or no rain the week after next. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. So helping us review this week's news is the Labour Group I don't know actually if you are the leader, Ron Stone.
At the minute.
You are actually acting leader for the Labour Group.
Correct.
And councillor for St George West, Ron Stone. Now, Ron, can you just tell us what's going on in the Labour Group? Because we keep hearing of various different leaders. And also, you know, I suppose the main question is, why aren't you sitting in there with the Cabinet? The Labour Group were invited in by the new Mayor, George Ferguson, and you should be in there.
Well, let me clarify what's going on. We had a number of discussions with George in relation to the important issues in the city, and he signed up to a letter for 18 of those points that were put forward in the mayoral election campaign by Marvin Rees and by the Labour Party, and that he would work constructively with us along that basis to progress that agenda. We went to the Labour Group, and the Labour Group voted in favour of going in. It was a majority vote, it's true, but under the rules of the Labour Party, we had to submit the agreement that we got with the Mayor and our vote to the NEC or representatives of the NEC.
That's the National Executive Committee.
Correct,
of the party.
Yes. And this is when there's no clear overall control, or we may be a minority administration, which we would have been in a cabinet, or a rainbow cabinet as suggested. And although there are places like Liverpool and other cities that have got mixed cabinets and been allowed to do this, the NEC representatives told us that we had to stay out.
Well, that's a little bit unfair, isn't it? Because many of those cities up north have got Labour mayors. So it seems that the Labour Party is happy to have other parties in with them when they're in charge, but not when they're not in charge. I mean, don't you think that there's a little bit of an incongruity there, Ron?
Absolutely. And it's one of the questions that we've been trying to get answers to. And I've written to the chair of the NEC as the existing leader, looking to the results post the spring elections in 2013, where we're confident that we would get more members on the council and the cabinet would have to be re-looked at again. I mean, even George admits that. And whether they would change their mind. And at the minute, I'm still awaiting any form of response, even to saying that they've received my letter, let alone any form of issue, because we'd like, in those circumstances, if we make the gains that we do, we'd like to speak to them on an individual basis, one-to-one, face-to-face.
Now, you're at the moment acting leader of the Labour Group. How
Correct.
Long until the Labour Party actually chooses a new leader? Because the previous leader, Peter Hammond, as I understand it, resigned because of this whole business
Correct.
Of a conflict, really, of interest between what the local Labour Party members and
That's
councillors
right.
in the city wanted and what the National Executive of the party had told them they were
Correct.
Allowed to do.
Yeah, well, he felt he couldn't act in that circumstance. I could understand that. Monday night is the night where we're actually electing our new leader for 2013.
Now, the first job, I suppose, of your party is going to be to take a look at the city's budget. Now, the mayor has only been in post, what, something like 2 months now, less than
Correct.
2 months. And so how much input has into your knowledge has George Ferguson actually had on this new budget? It certainly looks as if it may have been mostly prepared by council officers
Correct.
Acting to the orders of the previous administration, which was the Liberal Democrats
Correct.
Under Simon Cook.
Yes. And we have been told today, because all the party leaders were asked to meet George on an individual basis, one by time, yesterday, and he would brief us on the budget. What he told us was nothing that we didn't read already in the Evening Post. That was its headline figures of 35 million with no detail. And the full detail for the public consultation budget and the full detail of the cuts will only be released at 10 p.m. on Monday of next week. And we, as elected members of council, will get that given to us at 9 p.m. next Monday. And we're expected to look at the £400 million budget and make reasoned comments to the media if asked, and that clearly is an impossibility and a stupid idea.
Well, that sounds appalling. But anyway, I mean, that 35 million cuts out of a 400 million budget, Ron, is a lot of money, isn't it? I mean, that's absolutely. You're coming on for 10% cuts this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why we were anxious and why I've complained to George personally today that we needed the detail over the weekend to be able to really examine where he thinks he's protecting 29,000 of the most vulnerable in the city, whether we agree with that or not. As you rightly say, the majority of the budget has been put together by the financial advisors and officers of the City Council, and George's impact in that is being basically to have the cost of renaming the council house and the possibility of looking at a congestion charge, as I understand it, on access to the city by motorists.
So this is essentially, I mean, is it, am I exaggerating to say this is really Simon Cook's budget, because he was the leader of the Liberal Democrats in the run-up to the mayor election?
Yes, and I think if you look also at the impact on elderly persons' care today, which was, I understand, is a cross-party idea that came up with the new proposals, or the latest proposals. It's basically underpinning what was on the Liberal Democrats consultation paper on elderly persons care before they lost the control to the mayor.
Well, I ought to point out that I did invite Simon Cook, who was Liberal Democrat leader, onto the programme today, 3 days ago. I haven't received any reply from him, from answer phone messages or from texts. I'm also joined by old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers. Hi, Martin.
Hello.
Martin, over the, I suppose the big story economically over the Christmas period, we've had a couple of weeks off with our pre-recorded programme a week ago, is the fiscal cliff. That's certainly a biggie. What's your thoughts about whether this is, there is any kind of reality to this? Because my feelings, having watched a lot of this on the telly and listened to the radio commentary, read about it in the newspapers, is essentially all that's happened here is that Obama has had a gun pointed against his head by the financial sector in the United States and told, sign this piece of paper here or else. And he's basically just kicked the can down the road for only 2 months. This is all going to come back to hit him again in two months' time.
Well, that's right, and of course the euro crisis hasn't gone away either. So you saw a sort of a bit of a surge in the stock market yesterday. The FTSE was trading above 6,000 points for the first time for months. But it just shows how fragile and febrile the whole situation is. I mean, you know, it's all basically a confidence trick at the moment, and they, you know, they're trying to keep the markets happy, and because there wasn't a complete meltdown, they then have a little you know, psychological surge. But the reality of the situation is still pretty dire if you actually look at it fundamentally, and the banking system is still bankrupt basically.
I mean, our very own financial people here, Hargreaves Lansdown, one of their commentators was on, I mean, he sounded a bit like a kind of barrow boy, I must say. Didn't sound like, you know, you would expect someone who's a sort of learned city chap. But anyway, his comment on Five Live over the Christmas, I happened to tune in as I was driving along, was, it's a big box and it's being ticked.
Well, yes, I mean, there hasn't been, if they hadn't done...
What does he mean? What does he mean by that? It's a big box, the fiscal cliff, well, and it's been ticked.
The fiscal cliff, let's face it, is actually the reason there's a fiscal cliff is because the Republicans in the Congress insisted that there should be a fiscal cliff, and that, you know, it's actually a self-imposed deadline. There's no actual reason to have a deadline except that they insisted that they have one, which of course is playing Russian roulette with the markets. It's absolutely insane, and they've managed to, they've fired the gun, and there wasn't a bullet in the chamber, but now they're going to have another go. And eventually, of course, there will be a bullet in the chamber, and the US economy will crash as the euro economy will crash.
Well,
and
yes,
economy,
you will keep crash saying as well. This, Martin, you've been saying it for 3 years.
But it only ever happens once, doesn't it? A crash only ever happens once by definition. It's like a skyscraper collapsing into its own footprint. It only ever happens once, and when it happens, it happens. And I've got, when people say there's no chance of a crash here, or they'll sort this out, as far as I can see, there is 100% possibility that the markets will crash, because the banks are still bust. They've been bust for the last 4 years. They're still bust. They're printing money to keep them going. But what's interesting now, of course, is that the markets are now concentrating on the US, not on Greece. And of course, each individual US citizen owes more than each individual Greek citizen. So in actual fact, the US is bust in spades. more bust than the Greeks are.
Well, I mean, I sort of agree with you a little bit, because I was looking at one of the articles on This Is Money, which is a sort of Daily Mail spin-off, quite a good website, actually, and they're talking there over Christmas about an epidemic of audit fraud in the banking sector. An epidemic.
That's right. Well, I mean, if you notice, in the 1980s, when the savings and loans system collapsed in the US, when Reagan was in charge, up to 1,000 senior executives were sent to prison. Now, this time, nobody's been sent to prison, apart from Bernie Madoff. And in actual fact, the policy is they either arrest everybody because they were all involved in fraud, or they arrest nobody because they were all involved. And so they've gone for the policy as, well, we can't arrest everybody, so therefore we can't arrest anybody. And of course, the solution is to arrest them all.
What about a Truth and Reconciliation Commission for the city?
Well, first of all, let's just enforce the law. But of course, if they enforce the law on the banking system, you're basically condemning it to collapse, which is why they don't want to enforce the law, because it will cause the system to collapse. Well, the system will collapse anyway, and at that point, we can start prosecuting people.
The thing is, Martin, you keep talking about collapse, but these banks, they can generate money out of nowhere, as Mervyn King has been doing with quantitative easing, and basically it's almost like sort of keeping this dead patient going, you know. Even though these banks are zombie banks, they are continually moving because all this kind of new energy is put into them from nowhere.
Well, that's right. And of course, they could probably, if they didn't impose a fiscal cliff on themselves, they could probably carry on printing money for a while longer. But just like the condemned government here, the Republicans in Congress are determined to shrink the state. And of course, what that really means is, let's put the gun to our head and make sure there is a bullet in the chamber and blow our brains out. Let's get on with it and do it. And eventually, that is what will happen.
Well, talking about shrinking the state, what's your thoughts about, you know, the future for Bristol, Ron, in, say, 2020? You know, how much spending will be going on in cities like Bristol in that time?
Well, I read the Municipal Journal, which is one of the house magazines that go around councils this week. And there's a forecast in there that every local authority in the UK by 2020 will have their budget in reality cut by 40%. And if you think of that in relation to the increase in age of the population, the increase in costs for elderly persons' care, all the issues around housing, and indeed, if our economy doesn't pick up, unemployment and the benefit issues, etc. I mean, it's grim. And it's going to be grim, whoever's in control, unless we can change national government, I'm afraid.
Okay, one of the big stories also over Christmas break was, I mean, for me, a bit of a gobsmacker, £5 billion tax raid on British fortunes in Swiss banks. I mean, this is something that many of the tax justice campaigners have been calling for decades. But there's a big but here, I'm afraid. We will never know the identities of the tax avoiders. Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs are to claw back money that British investors have hidden in Swiss banks. This was some good news on the 1st of January. So thousands of wealthy British investors hiding money in Swiss bank accounts will finally be forced to pay billions in unpaid tax under a deal that comes into force today. Under the settlement between the UK and the Swiss authorities, an estimated £5 billion will be clawed back and handed to HMRC over the next 6 years. The deal signed last year, 2011, as hailed as the largest tax evasion settlement in UK history by Chancellor George Osborne, Martin.
Yeah, I think what's significant about this is it's a bilateral deal between Britain and Switzerland. And what should have been happening and was happening is that the EU as a whole were trying to bargain with the Swiss about this and say, right, well, what sort of, you know, deal can we do? Because all of our nationals are squirreling their money. I mean, lots of the Greek ruling class have got their money squirreled away in Switzerland. And so, you know, basically what Britain has done by doing this deal is undermine the negotiating position of the rest of the EU. And basically, of course, the people are not, in fact, paying what they're actually supposed to be paying. This is a deal behind the scenes, so nobody really knows whether they're actually paying what they're supposed to be paying. We don't even know who they are. In Norway, of course, everybody's tax returns are on the internet. And you can find out, say, Hargreaves Lansdown, you can just go, oh, Hargreaves Lansdown, how much are they worth? Ah, exactly that much. We can look up George Ferguson and say, how much is George Ferguson worth? Because that's in Norway, that's the way they do it. That's the way we should do it too.
Ron, a similar agreement was rejected by the German Parliament back in November due to concerns that tax evaders would be able to retain anonymity. So people who've been evading tax won't be named. And also, of course, all we can do here is trust the Swiss banks. There was a guy called Rudolf Elmer a few years ago that realised that there was lots of tax evasion going on. He'd been working in a Swiss bank and he got a disc, copied all the names of the people who'd been tax evading onto that disc and handed it to WikiLeaks, and he was arrested and put on trial for his trouble. And he's written, I think it's called a little book called Tax Heavens, which is all about how the Swiss have actually been colluding with the rich elite of the Western world in making sure that people can keep their money there anonymously. So we have to actually trust these Swiss banks that they're going to do this, number one. And number two, we're not going to know any of the names of the people who've been evading tax, however many billions of pounds they've got squirreled away in Smaug's Mountain over in Switzerland.
Well, all I can say on this, I mean, I'm no economist, but from my own investments and the fact that the income tax people have chased me for 2 years for an underpayment of less than 20p and given me the option of paying it in instalments, I find this absolutely amazing. I don't think there should be anonymity at all. I think people should be named and shamed. And do we trust the Swiss banks? No. Do I trust main banks and the banking system? No, I don't. I mean, the whole of the world economy has been brought around by the people that control major capital in any of the cities of the world. And they haven't told the truth. They've hidden the truth from people. They have falsified and done things that if we did it as individuals, we would be criminally censored.
Well, I just ought to point out that this is tax evasion.
Yes,
this
exactly.
is not tax avoidance. These people who are tax evaders.
Yes, and deliberately so.
The largest tax evasion settlement in UK history. It's being trumpeted by Chancellor George Osborne. So, Martin, I suppose this is the best we can hope for, really, when the elites in this part of the world are actually in collusion with the Swiss banking fraternity.
Well, as I said earlier, what Britain should have been doing is getting together with its European partners and really putting the frighteners on the Swiss. It's like, do you want access to the single market? Because if you don't play ball with our tax authorities, then Switzerland is going to be locked out of the single market. We won't buy any Swiss cheese, no Swiss clocks, no Swiss nothing to be sold in the rest of the EU until you pay. But of course, the British, by doing this deal, have undermined the rest of the EU, as Britain frequently does.
Okay, on to another financial related story, and that is the gongs and the knighthoods. Ken Livingstone and Danny Boyle have to be slapped on the back, I think, for saying no to their knighthoods. You know, the whole business of whether you're made a knight or not. Am I right, Martin, in thinking originally this was to do with medieval knights and whether you had the right to bear arms or not?
Well, yes, in the medieval era, that's what it was about.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking where it comes from, because the monarch originally could say, you're allowed to carry a sword, you're allowed to carry a gun, and you're not. You know, this is where it originates from, this whole business of knighthoods.
Yes, I suppose so.
But anyway, the main point really here being that one of the people knighted was the head of the Financial Services Authority, the guy who was in charge when the financial crisis was going on, and which was largely, of course, due to bad regulation of the financial sector, Ron.
Well, it's a reward for total failure, isn't it? And it's meaningless in relation to people like that. I think any criticism of the honours system still needs to recognise the real people that get awards that have been doing community work for years, or helping disabled kids, or whatever level that they worked at in communities. I think they deserve anything that they can get, and good luck to them. But people like this, and some of the, shall we say, personalities and some of the stars, it's all a bit, how can I say, it's very limited in relation to its reality.
Well, I mean, it seems like these knighthoods nowadays are sort of, you know, big badges of failure and also of betrayal of the public. I mean, ultimately, this guy's been paid quite a lot of money, possibly public money. I'm not quite sure how the Financial Services Authority is funded. I mean, this guy, Hector Sants, was the chief executive, or sorry, we should say Sir Hector Sants, and his knighthood has been criticised. The Financial Times reported that MPs Douglas Carswell, Conservative MP for Surrey, and Pat McFadden, Labour MP and member of the Commons Treasury Committee, criticised the decision, with Carswell telling the Financial Times, "A knighthood is becoming almost as debased a currency as the British pound." It's also come out that in 1990, Hector Sants was on the board of UBS when they sacked and sued their head researcher for disclosing abuses of accounting practice. So, I mean, this is one of their head of research at UBS was a whistleblower, essentially disclosing that there was fraud going on within the organisation, and for his pleasure, for disclosing that there was a dishonest business, he was sacked and sued. Martin.
Well, yes, and this is all very revealing of the power structure that we live under, where basically criminals, far from being punished, are rewarded, and of course ultimately that cannot stand, and the system itself is undermined by this kind of tolerance of the intolerable.
Okay, Ron.
Yeah, just on that, I think the guy that was the whistleblower should have got anointed.
Right, yes. And one place where a lot of this stuff will be being discussed later on this month, I always like to try and trail this because you get very, very little in the mainstream press, sometimes bits and pieces about the Davos meetings. Again, this is an annual meeting, which is more public than the Bilderberg conferences, which are of top bankers, top oil people, and politicians, most powerful and rich and secretive. But Davos is one step down from the Bilderbergers, if you could say, one step down the mountain. And this is happening in Switzerland at January the 23rd to the 27th. The World Economic Forum will focus on global health issues when it holds its annual winter meeting in Davos, Switzerland, from January the 23rd to the 27th, the forum organisers said on Thursday. Martin, can you give us an idea of what Davos is about, and whether it's actually a positive or a negative influence on the financial welfare of ordinary people, and in this case I suppose they're looking particularly at health?
Well, yes, I mean, they meet at Davos every year, of course it's in Switzerland, who are in fact in the naughty corner, as we were mentioning only just a moment ago, and it's part of Switzerland's way of trying to keep itself in the centre of power, because they invite all the wealthy and powerful people of the world to come and visit them once a year and have a shindig. It tends to be that the World Social Forum takes place in developing countries at the same time as Davos, I believe. I'm not quite sure where that's happening this year. But, I mean, there's a multiplicity of these kind of shindigs every year. And each year they wring their hands about the state of the financial markets and then go home and carry on as before.
What was your quote, I think, is you said before Christmas something about these group of rich men getting together to have some sort of conspiracy against the public.
Adam Smith in the Wealth of Nations said that businessmen never get together, even on social occasions, without some conspiracy against the public being cooked up.
Okay, did you want to say something about that, Ron?
No, other than, I mean, clearly we do give foreign aid, and there's been questions in relation to where some of that aid is gone, particularly in India and in the scientific and some of their rocket program.
Oh, Christ.
And it's a shame that the aid that should be directed for the benefit of people that are really struggling on health issues, if this is what this conference is about, I think there needs to be a relook at where the money actually goes, because fresh water, as you see on the TV adverts every night, is an absolute essential. And I think there's an awful lot of money that is misdirected in the name of foreign aid. So if they are on a health kick and they are going to deliver something, for God's sake, give it to health and people that need it.
Yeah, and we will be keeping an eye on the Davos World Economic Forum conference, January the 23rd to the 27th, which is a sort of a public face, really, of what is becoming a Western financial cult, almost. Certainly very, very secretive private businesses run for private profit. Anyway, obese and unhealthy people could face benefit cuts. Smart cards could be used to monitor claimants' use of gyms, and those who do not exercise could be penalised. This is in Guardian yesterday. The report precedes the transfer of responsibility for community health from the NHS to local authorities, Ron.
Yeah, I've got this vision of George Osborne standing in front of either a rowing machine or a running track, that you get in a gym, and holding out a handful of notes, and some poor devil on there sweating like mad, trying to make sure that they do the right number of press-ups or miles per inch or whatever they want to call it to qualify for the money at the end of it. And I just think this is horrendous. I mean, it's just another attack on the benefit system. It doesn't, I think, take full cognizance of people with medical conditions that can develop and make them either overweight or obese for whatever reasons. And I just think it's an ill-thought-out arrangement, and I think it's a bad idea.
Martin, in England, 24% of men and 26% of women are obese, while 65% of men and 85% of women are either overweight or obese, according to the latest edition of the Health Survey for England. Well, what's your thoughts about why people are obese? Because if you're looking at... OK, go on, you tell me, and then I'll tell you what my thinking.
Well, I mean, we're the second most obese country in the world. We're beaten by our American cousins, of course. Who obviously they tend to beat us on that one. I mean, health is a very serious matter, but this idea of let's pick on the fat kids, which is basically what this is, it's just bullying, isn't it? Of course, it's unworkable as well. I mean, there's no way that this can be actually a practical proposal, but it's just all, you know, that Osborne chap, he just likes going around kicking sand in the fat kids' faces, doesn't he? They're getting a very bullying streak, aren't they? This whole attitude of the condemned government. If they think the British people are going to buy into all of this, then they are sadly mistaken, I think.
Some people will,
but I think a lot of other people will see straight through it.
The other thing, of course, is that one of the reasons for overeating is often comfort eating. It's to do with anxiety and angst. When I say angst, I mean kind of subconscious. It's stuff where you're feeling anxious about things, but you're not quite sure what to do about it. That's one of the reasons. I mean, whether it's to do with difficulties within the family, financial trouble, work trouble, this is an indication that the people, Ron, out there are actually, they're suffering from angst, subconscious fears.
I wouldn't disagree with that at all, and I agree with Martin. I think the current government are looking at anything that they can do to be divisive and to pick on the most vulnerable in communities right across the UK, and this is just another instance of it. And I don't think this is something that will really fly at all.
Don't you think it's a serious proposal, or is it just done to sort of, I suppose, I mean, what we've seen quite often these days, which is this divide and rule thing, where there's an attempt to set people who are maybe on part-time work and claiming benefit and benefit claimants, and also people who are in very low-paid work and aren't claiming benefits, set them against each other?
Well, there's that to it, but I also think that if you put up enough bad news as potential, and then you only introduce the stuff that you're going to do in the first place, you divert attention away from what you were doing. And so some people will heave no doubt a sigh of relief when it doesn't come in, but the real benefit cuts that are in there in relation to council tax support and some of the other issues, potential for losing or changing the winter fuel allowance, for example.
I mean, if you're on benefits and overweight, this is certainly not going to help your anxiety problem, is it, to have stories like this bandied about?
No, not at all.
Anyway, the new Bank of England boss, Mark Carney, this is the knight in shining armour, is coming over the horizon. He's told to steer clear of politics. This was at the end of December in the Daily Mail. He has now been dragged into a row over his political ambitions after details of a holiday with a senior Liberal in Canada emerged, fueling speculation that Carney thought about running for Prime Minister of Canada in his homeland before accepting the job on Threadneedle Street. Time magazine has called him smart and sexy, saying central bankers aren't often young, good-looking and charming, but Mark Carney is all three.
Well, we should start a fan club, obviously. You know, it's like the Beatles fan club. He's obviously going to save us, isn't he?
Ron, what are your thoughts about this guy? I mean, my understanding is that he's certainly the last two Bilderberg conferences, which are these very secretive bankers conferences, which were started by Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, a former Nazi Party member and SS officer back in the 1950s. Carney's been to the last two of these secret Bilderberg meetings, and there was a Bilderberg steering committee meeting in Rome, another secret meeting which was miraculously leaked just a week and a half before this announcement that Carney was going to take over. So, I mean, this guy's also an ex-Goldman Sachs man, and is the first ever governor of the Bank of England that will be actually not a British citizen. He's going to have to try and get his British citizenship in order to do the job. What does this tell us about the direction of the Bank of England in the years to come, and whether Mark Carney's going to be up to the job?
Well, I thank you for the update on his history. I mean, that worries me right from the beginning. Whether we should have a Canadian in charge of our banking system, I suppose that's a point for discussion. Would I trust him? No. Should we trust him? No. He's part of the international banking setup, and to me, all of them, in my view, have got us into the situation that we're in, and I can't see anybody at the minute. The guy that's been honest enough to say there's problems ended up being arrested. So I just link this guy in with everybody else that we've been talking about in the last quarter of an hour.
The other thing, important thing for people to realise is that he can't be political because he's independent. He'll be running the Bank of England, and George Osborne won't be exactly able to tell him what to do, because of course that's what Gordon Brown made the Bank of England independent when he was Chancellor. Now of course, for many decades, the Bank of England wasn't independent, and therefore the policies that were pursued by the Bank of England were decided by the Chancellor of the Exchequer, and actually that might actually be the right way to do it. Independent central banks are in the pocket of the private bankers because they give them their orders, whereas if the Bank of England wasn't independent, was actually run from the cabinet, then they would actually be able to assert some power over the markets.
Oh dear, so it's like putting Dracula in charge of the nunnery, putting Mark Carney in charge of the British banking system.
As central bankers go, he's probably as good as you're going to get, but the question is, why is the structure as it is? I mean, we ought to be asking questions about what is the Bank of England doing? What's it there for? Why have we got it?
But everything's going to be wonderful. We've been told in a special New Year message this year from Prime Minister David Cameron. For anyone that was decided to go down to London to witness all the fireworks on New Year's Eve, I was quite astounded to see on the TV coverage of that they had actually some speech by David Cameron blasting out from the loudspeakers on New Year's Eve. I'm not quite sure whether that's what the revelers really went there to see or listen to. But anyway, here is David Cameron and his New Year speech, or at least a part of it.
To anyone starting this new year with questions about where we're heading and what the future holds, I want to reassure you of this. We are on the right track. On all the big issues that matter to Britain, we're heading in the right direction. And I have the evidence to prove it. This government inherited a huge budget deficit that was dragging our country down. Well, this new year, that deficit is forecast to be £13 billion smaller than last new year, down by one quarter since we came to office. We inherited a welfare system that was frankly out of shape, that paid people not to work. So we've made some big changes. And this new year, almost 500,000 more people are in work than last new year. That is real progress.
Well, 500,000 more people, Martin Summers, in work than this time last year.
Yes, well, I'll come to that in a moment. The first point to make, of course, is that the debt to GDP ratio has gone up. So although the deficit's come down, the deficit as a proportion of our GDP has gone up because the GDP has gone down. In other words, the economy's been dead in the water while these people have been in charge.
And can you just explain what the difference between debt and deficit is then?
Well, the deficit is basically, a one year's government's borrowing. The debt as a whole is your whole national debt, but the deficit as a proportion of GDP, I mean, when I say the debt to GDP, I mean the deficit to GDP ratio is actually going up, and it looks as if they're not even going to meet the targets that Alistair Darling had set for bringing the budget deficit down when he was in charge. And of course, that is because the economy is shrinking. Now, what's very weird about the British economy, and lots of economists are asking themselves this question, we've got a shrinking economy, but employment is going up. And I think the answer is, just anecdotally, talking to people I know, is that people are getting some kind of jobs, part-time jobs, through agencies, this sort of thing. Now, in actual fact, you don't want in a modern economy, people doing lots of silly little jobs. In places like Sweden and Finland, they train people to produce goods with services which can be sold in the rest of the world. They have high wages, and you don't want people doing crummy little jobs. In fact, you know, people who are doing waitressing in places like Norway get paid a proper living wage, because you don't want people doing crummy little jobs. It means that the economy is actually not developing or changing. You can't actually get much productivity out of a hairdresser. You know, you can't really improve hairdressing that much. That's the problem. And Britain basically specialises in cheap and cheerful. It's back to Victorian times, isn't it?
Ron, $13 billion smaller deficit.
Yeah. From whom and where was it come from? We've had this debate earlier. Is $13 billion on the backs of some of the most vulnerable in society? Savings on frontline services, cuts in my position, if you like, as a councillor on a local council. And how much bigger would the deficit have been reduced if the proper control of banks, etc., that we've talked about in relation to tax evasion and everything else had actually been in place? And to me, he's crowing on the issue of how much it's been reduced. But it's the people, the same group of people that they look to take money for and to take credit for whatever monies that they can scrape and save from them. And I think it's totally wrong.
But, I mean, you're in the Post, as we call it, the Bristol Post, yesterday, Ron, talking about building council houses.
Yes.
You know, surely with the cutbacks that are going on, there simply isn't going to be the money around to build any council houses in Bristol. I know Marvin Rees, who was standing against George Ferguson in the mayor elections,
yeah,
he was talking about building thousands of council houses. 4,000 council houses. How can you actually find the money to do that?
By not using the normal budgetary stream and grant that the City Council has, by thinking totally outside the box, by looking for ethical investment from pension funds. They want to look for a stable and assured return for their pension pot, and to borrow money from them on an open basis. There's 7,400 potential homes could be built on land that the City Council has in its own ownership at the minute. So we were saying 4. And on the basis of that, the pension trustees would be given the lease of the land on a very long lease, probably 999 years or something of that sort, and maybe a 3% increase above the best market rate for savings, a guaranteed 6% on their return. And that would give them, underpinning the ability to take whatever level of investment in the value of the site, it would create real jobs, it would boost the local economy. The new houses that we build would get a benefit from what is now known as the New Homes Bonus, and that would bring money back into the council to help facilitate other elements within the city's budget. All of the sites are within the city boundary. None of them go out into the green belt. And it's an open invitation for ethical investment. And there's been, if you're a trustee of a pension fund, you've spent years trying to find an ethical investment that isn't got either political connotations or health connotations, etc.
Well, I hate to interrupt you, Ron, but I think most pension fund managers, don't they just look for where they're going to get the best returns from? They're not that interested necessarily in whether it's an ethical investment.
Well, yes, but what I'm basically saying is, what is better than investing in your own city, in homes for people, in dealing with a major issue in this city with a guaranteed return? It doesn't bet on the FTSE or on shares or anything else. This is the way forward. And I've offered that to George Ferguson today. I've given him the paper I've given you. And I've offered, even from opposition, to lead with the officers of the City Council an attempt to reach our target of 4,000.
Well, it's all very well talking to the mayor, but what about the other parties? What about the Lib Dems, and what about the Conservatives, and what about the Greens? What are their thoughts about your proposal? Because it's certainly stirred things up a little bit, hasn't it?
Yes, it has, and that was the reason for doing it. And we've taken some stick as the Labour group in relation to not being in the cabinet and throwing rocks at the mayor. This is an attempt to show that we can work from opposition on a major issue collectively. And in talking to the Greens are at the minute absolutely gobsocked. They hadn't thought of it. The Lib Dems currently have got proposals to build 12 council houses a year for 2 years. And so this is a radical move away from where they're going. But I think everybody's interested in looking at it. And in talking to the Director of Housing, he had gone down a similar route himself, independently, during 2012. And then the drop-off in the economy has stopped him doing it. But he and I are going to be back and talking, either in conjunction with the mayor or myself as shadow cabinet member for housing, to try and promote this, because this issue is bigger than the mayor, politics, me, or the council.
Why is that? Why is it so big?
Because there's 14,500 people on a waiting list. Some of them have been there for 10 years. And that is wrong. And if you ignore that, I don't deserve to be a councillor. We've got to find a solution.
There's one problem, isn't there? I mean, I need to just keep coming up with problems, but one of the big problems here is that you've got something called the Public Property Board as part of the city deal coming along. This is all the council land. I mean, there's a fantastic amount of it. Some of it is buildings. I think I'm right in saying that Bristol has got more public land per acre of the city than any other authority in the country. We've got lots and lots of public land. A lot of it, of course, is, you know, it's just kind of parkland, that kind of thing, but a lot of it is also brownfield sites, that is to say old warehouses, this kind of thing that's sort of derelict, falling into disrepair. I'm sure there's lots and lots of people that would like to develop it, but the city deal and the Public Property Board is coming along, isn't it, in 2013. This is run by the Local Enterprise Partnership. This is basically a private company. These aren't meetings which are open to the public like the council meetings are. And if you want to get some of that land to build these homes on in the future, you're going to have to go and talk to the Local Enterprise Partnership. Correct. I think it's James Dury and people like that who are on there in order to get that land, because even though it's public land, the council isn't managing it anymore. It's going to be managed by a private local enterprise partnership.
Yes, I understand all that, but the, like I said, the issue is bigger than them as well, and it is a social issue, and it's an absolute disgrace that if we just leave it on the basis of, well, we're doing something and just ticking a very small box rather than really looking for a radical solution. It's not going to be easy. I've got no illusions about that, but I think we've got to try, and we've got to try and push this agenda as far as we can in the time that we've got the city mayor, and that's why I've included the mayor, because he will have influence on the various agencies that you've mentioned.
Okay, also a disaster for Lloyds TSB customers. I mean, quite a lot of financial stories, even more than usual actually this week, for TSB customers on New Year's Eve, as a technical glitch renders cash points and debit cards out of action. Martin, this is just another of a series of these problems. I mean, we've had cash points and we've had this kind of electronic banking for the last, I'm thinking about 40 years? Yeah, at least 40 years. And why is it over the last year or so we've started to see all these massive glitches going on with people, money disappearing out of people's accounts, people asking for their balance and being told there's nothing there, and also finding it impossible to get any money from the account. Going to the supermarket, getting ready to pay with the card and finding, oh dear, the card doesn't work.
Well, yes, and I'm not really a technical person, so presumably...
Neither are TSB. They've refused to tell the Daily Mail what the source of the problem was. Well,
I mean, the suspicion has to be that these aren't potentially technical problems. I mean, one of the problems in 2008 was we were literally, you know, 24 hours from the ATMs not giving money out, and that's what will happen if there is a crash. People will go to the ATMs to get their money out, and it'll be like the Corralito in Argentina, and they just say, well, sorry, we've lost it, because that's what happens in crashes.
Yeah, this is Lloyds TSB, which of course is a publicly owned bank at the moment.
Well, see, we're mentioning the $13 billion cut from the deficit. We've lost $23 billion, I was reading the other day, on the bank bailouts. The British taxpayers lost $23 billion on that. And of course, in theory, we're going to get all that money back when the banks are privatised. But we're not. We're not going to get that money back. In actual fact, the deficit is far worse than they're saying, because that money isn't included. So that $23 billion we've lost on bailing the banks out, that's not included in the deficit, because we're going to get that back, except we aren't.
Ron?
Well, it's just another example of problems of computing banking, and I've had it myself in relation to what I see to be unfair charges on my account, and the computer not registering my withdrawal of permission for charges on a credit card account, which had a nil balance on it, but they wanted £31 for insurance, and everybody knows that basic credit cards got insurance anyway. It's PPI
selling. Is that payment protection insurance you were being charged for still? I mean, when was this?
This was this week.
God. And which bank was that with?
HSBC.
Oh, right, the money launderers.
Mm. Well, yes, money launderers, as we know. And, of course, the other thing that people fail to recognise is that the banking system is being propped up by the drug cartels. The only thing keeping the private, so-called private banking system going is the taxpayer and the drug kingpins. That's it. And of course, at some point, that's not sustainable.
Yeah, being slightly unfair to the Labour leader this week, because David Cameron issued his New Year's message, but Ed Miliband also did his own New Year's message. So let's have a listen to Ed, leader of the Labour Party.
The story that stuck with me the most was the man who told me his story. He said, "I walked 11 miles to a job interview because I couldn't afford the bus fare. I got the job, and then I walked 11 miles back." He was still looking for somewhere to live because he hadn't got his first paycheck and he was using the food bank. Such a long way away from the normal stereotype you'd have about the people using food banks. And what does it tell me? It tells me something about the incredible spirit of people like Daphne who set up the food bank. That's such grounds for optimism about Britain. It tells me about the indomitable spirit of people trying to find work, even in difficult circumstances. But it also teaches me about politics and what politics must do. We've all got to at least imagine walking in the shoes of others, including the man who walked 11 miles to the job interview. That's what it means to be a one-nation prime minister. We'll never eliminate struggle, but we can tip the scales towards hope. That's what a one-nation government is about.
Well, with First Group's bus fares, maybe there are other people that have been walking in Bristol 11 miles to their job interviews here, Ron. Now, he's talking there about an indomitable spirit. It almost sounds like he's a kind of wartime prime minister in peacetime.
Well, yes, because I think, like I said earlier in this interview, there is a war going on between general and genuine working class people, working families, etc., people that have been made redundant through no fault of their own, seeking work, etc. They have been savagely attacked as malingerers and whatever, and there is, if you talk to people in the situation, they are determined to go out to work. And, you know, I admire the chap that's done that, but it just underlines that there is distinctly two different levels in this country, and certainly the current government is not interested in that guy at all. And it's sad, and I'm hopeful that the Labour Party will be able to nationally do something radical. And as soon as we get rid of the current government and be in a position to be able to make radical change, the better.
Martin, we had a few weeks ago Mervyn King, Governor King Mervyn, the Governor of the Bank of England, we're saying goodbye to this year at Easter, I think, talking about the way that the economy has dipped being almost like a war having gone on. But what do you think about what Ed had to say there, Ed Miliband, in his New Year's address?
Well, obviously, I'm glad to see that he and Ed Balls are not going to buy the bait that George Osborne given them. They are going to vote against these benefit cuts. But of course, there are some people in our party who were saying, "Oh no, we'll have to go. We mustn't be seen to be on the side of the unemployed because we've got to win Middle England." And it's like, no, I'm afraid. I think Ron will agree with me here. The Labour Party should be seen to be on the side of the unemployed. Surely,
I mean, yes,
it's a no-brainer. And I think Ed is...
many people in political circles will say there are basic voters from the three main parties in the Greens have their basic voters, but the ones who are the swing voters are the middle ground. Those are the people. And if you have policies which appeal to them, those people are likely to come over to your party.
Yeah, well, look,
and you're saying the opposite to that.
We haven't had the crash yet, and I think the middle class in Basildon are going to get their P45s, and then they'll understand why they need an unemployment benefit system.
The Bath transmitter fire hits television and radio broadcasts. Well, there's the sniff of arson and possibly even sabotage here. The police are investigating whether a fire at a transmitter site that affected television and radio broadcasts to thousands of homes, well, tens of thousands of homes actually, was started deliberately. This was in the National News in The Guardian yesterday, or actually probably The Guardian today, because it happened yesterday. The fire service were called to a blaze at the site in Bathampton near Bath in North Somerset just before 6 a.m. on Thursday. Crews put out the fire, which they believe had been started deliberately, but the damage caused a power cut where the engineers were working to fix. Freeview TV channels, BBC Radio Bristol, National Analogue and Digital Radio channels have all been disrupted. The BBC estimated that 80,000 homes in the area around Bath were affected, Ron.
Yes, I woke up to that and switched on my telly, but signal came from Mendip, so it wasn't affected.
That's the big mast on the Mendips, yeah.
Correct.
But I mean, this has affected nearly 100,000 people in and around Bath, and you know, one does wonder if this is just some sort of random attack. Certainly the fire brigade is saying that they do think it's an arson, or whether it's just a sort of disquiet with the transmitter. You know, someone is actually trying to take out a transmitter here. Is this a domestic thing? Is it a foreign thing? Are they terrorists? What's going on? Martin? Yeah.
Well, the answer to that is I've no idea. It's obviously very, very worrying if people are actually, you know, if this is done deliberately. That's extremely destructive behaviour, isn't it?
I wouldn't have thought the good burgers of Bathampton are normally in the arsonist fold, but, it's very difficult to say, but I would have thought that in the situation, if the fire service are not convinced it was a fault of any sort, then it must have been started as a deliberate issue. Why? God knows.
Well, we shall maybe find out, maybe not. That's the way of these things, isn't it? Benefit Wars. Ian Duncan Smith is on the offensive before the uprating vote. This is what you were talking about just now, Ron.
That's right.
And Martin. The uprating vote is taking place next week. Can you finally round up, Ron, with your thoughts about this? Because what they're now voting on next week, it seems, is whether the benefit system will be capped at 1%. Now, what that means is, of course, with inflation above 1%, any percentage point of inflation above 1% is going to be eating into the basic threshold of poverty that people on benefits are getting their money. Basically, that they will be being driven down for every percentage point below the poverty line from that point onwards. So this is quite an important vote, isn't it?
Well, it is, and also there's a statement here that says claimants have seen payments rise by 20% compared to the average 12% pay rise for those in work. This is again the attempt for divide and rule between workers and those on benefit.
Martin?
This is just cutting demand out of the economy. So cutting benefits. In Iceland, they've increased unemployment benefits because that's what you do in a recession. Otherwise, the economy crashes. It's just idiotic.
Well, coming up now to the Murdoch News at 6 o'clock. Thanks very much to this week's guest, the acting leader of the Labour Group and councillor for St George West, Ron Stone. After the news, it took 12 years for the accusations of who was to blame for the Paris Concorde crash to work their way through the French courts. When they finally did last month, there were some surprising revelations. Join me after the news.
At bcfm.org.uk. BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour. Live from the Sky News Centre.
From the Sky News Centre at 6, a Pakistani teenager shot in the head by the Taliban for wanting girls to go to school has recovered enough to leave hospital. 15-year-old Malala was flown to the UK for treatment in October.